This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and it is a fabulous day to live in the Willamette Valley, and it is a Monday. Dave's favorite day of the week.
Yeah.
And so it's so exciting, and there's so many things going on in Salem and the capital and the counties. So many things to talk about. This is your place, folks, to be for your noon hour every Monday through Friday to talk about local issues, local things that inspire us or scare us or a little bit of both. Local initiatives and ideas.
More scared than inspired lately.
Anytime the legislature, isn't that a Mark Twain quote, something about, you know, you can't really relax until Congress adjourns.
Yeah, right.
Some of that effect. Anyway, anytime the legislature is in session, you have to watch. And you have to watch your wallets, and you have to watch how they're going to change how you live your life. So forth. Anyway, lots of things in the legislature.
And it's tax day.
We had Representative Denise Bowles on the show last on Friday. If you missed it, you can look at the podcast from the KYKN.com website.
Yes.
And listen to that. I really enjoyed having her on. I hope we get her back. She seems a little exasperated at being a freshman Republican in a supermajority Democratic Party legislature.
You could sense the little bit of frustration.
Yeah.
Just a little.
But the perspective was so interesting. This is what we're up against. This is the process that we have no say in. These are how our bills don't go anywhere. Da, da, da. These are how our votes don't matter. But she did say, by asking the question at committee levels and things like that, certain things get exposed in terms of more information gets out and more things get on the record. So that's... Unfortunately, that's about all you can expect or hope for.
That's sad that that's all she can do is just get it on the record. It doesn't really make a difference.
I think after the break, Dave, I'll tell a story about my near-death experience. Actually, it's an embarrassing story, so I'm holding off. I'm hoping we actually run out of time. But what happened to Brent on Thursday?
Near death, really?
Really? No, not at all.
Okay.
It is funny at my own expense. So we're going to do that after the break. But
okay,
let's start off with some news stories that are coming. There's so many things happening fast and furious. Looking at all the governments around us are looking for more revenue, it seems like. I don't hear too much of it from Marion County, but certainly Polk County. We're going to talk about that tomorrow with the sheriff. And a need for a levy to support public safety.
Yeah, that's important.
And then you get the legislature. Everything has, you know, just seems like everything has to do with raising money. And all those things having to do with raising money, they all tie it to education because they think it's more palatable. Oh, but it's for the kids. But it's for the classroom. Da, 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 da. So they can't just say, oh, it's for purse, right?
Yeah.
Or
because if it was they did that, none of us would give anything.
There was another point by Representative Bowles was that one thing or the other thing is not as significant as the totality, as the collective. It's in, like, once you pile things on top of things, and now they're talking, you know, let's do $2 billion in 2 years kinds of things. This is when you stack them all one on top of another, it's really frightening.
I'm still trying to figure out, since the state has record amount of money coming in, why they would need $2 billion, that's with a B, more money.
Well, we know why. But see, they want us to all think it's for education. So we have a new tax bill. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. But you've got a tax bill. You've got the PERS plan that the governor rolled out that only applies to schools. It doesn't apply to state workers. It doesn't apply to all the other jurisdictions whose employees are on PERS. So she's like, I don't know if it's a trial balloon to see, hey, if this floats, you know, but it instantly begged the question of why doesn't this involve all of the people who are covered by PERS, not just
right, you know,
the education department and the schools. Anyway, the PERS solution the tax hikes. You know, they want to make it appear as though it's not just to salvage the public employee pension liability.
But they need to fix it all.
Yeah.
All the PERS need to be fixed.
Yeah. It's all right. Move on. The thing about education is that it is embarrassing in Oregon. It's embarrassing.
It's
the second worst graduation rate in the nation.
Ouch.
We're not graduating our kids. What are they doing wrong?
Yeah.
Is it money? Are we not pouring? I mean, is money in the schools
going
to keep more kids in school?
Can't be. They're feeding them three times a day now.
So
breakfast, lunch, and dinner for free.
Dinner?
Yes.
They're not home doing their homework by then?
No. They're feeding them after school.
The other state, by the way, is New Mexico. It's kind of surprised me.
What?
I don't know why. Maybe it's because I'm judgmental and racist or something. One of those words. I was thinking it was going to be...
Somebody will throw it out
Mississippi.
There.
I thought it was going to be Arkansas, Mississippi, you know, Alabama or something. But no, it's New Mexico.
That's strange.
Yeah. Second worst graduation rate. Folks, really, if you attend high school... I mean, of course, I know I'm brilliant, so high school is really easy, right? But
it was a struggle for me.
You were supposed to laugh out loud at that.
Yeah, okay.
But, but really, it just doesn't seem the number of credits that you need and the topics that you need to conquer that getting a high school diploma is all that challenging. So
yeah, they've certainly made it easier.
All right, let's dive a little bit into the proposal. Which one? So we've talked about the value-added tax and how it stacks taxes every step of the production process.
Yes.
Right?
And which will get passed on to you and me.
Indeed.
The consumer.
And it'll be cumulative. So yeah. That was proposed, you know, a few years back, got referred to the voters, got shut down.
I would hope so.
It was like a $4 billion tax increase or something like
Ouch.
That.
Ouch.
So they're trying to take that concept, which is still supported by some.
What?
And then merge it with something that is more of a one time, but it's still going to be an economic, air quotes here, economic activity tax, because we have to find yet another way to not call it a sales tax.
How about no more money for me?
How about economic activity tax?
Yeah, economic activity.
All right. So they're trying to blend those two concepts to have one more palatable to, you know, the business community or Oregon, you know, business and industry people.
Uh-huh.
And they do like the compromise. They address some of the concerns that they've been advocating about. So they're encouraged, at least, and I think it's to raise $1 billion, but they're encouraged that have gone in this direction. It's a step in the right direction. And what was the other quote? We want it to be coupled with cost control. And that is,
what?
Of course, cost control. What that means is fixed PERS.
Uh-huh.
So OBI, your acronym of the day, Oregon Business and Industry. They like some of the new proposal. It's going in the right direction. And of course, it says, here's the headline in Salem Reporter. The governor wants to tap state funds to spare Oregon schools from retirement costs.
Huh.
What about the cities? What about the counties?
What about the state?
Transit districts and... Anyway, in the news, we've got, you know, nicotine tax bills. You got PERS tax. And we've got the city council in Salem here considering revenue, right?
Right.
And by the
three
way,
three proposals the mayor, on the table tonight.
The mayor is usually with us on
yes.
Tuesday. She'll be with us on Thursday this week
good,
as we
good.
Talk to the sheriff from Polk County tomorrow. I wanted to accommodate the Mayor Bennett's schedule. $1 billion business tax proposed for Oregon. But small firms accepted, which is, it's so playbook. You even wonder if somebody, the people on the left and the pro-tax people ever get tired of the playbook. Well, we're not going to tax the small businesses. You know, anybody with less than $1 million of revenue, taxable revenue. Okay, so let's say Dave owns a used car shop.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're selling a bunch of $10,000 cars, some used cars, and you sell 100 a year.
That's a million.
That's $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
100. I mean, that's like 8 cars a month. You are not rich.
No.
I mean, come on, people. Oh, it's $1 million. So this soundbite, I mean, you can know this is going on in rooms. this soundbite is going to sound better. We're only going to tax people whose revenue is $1 million because it sounds to the voter, the idiot voter, like they have $1 million in their pockets and that there aren't small businesses barely scraping by where the owners are putting in more hours and getting paid less than minimum wage, but their sales are $1 million because they're like the used car salesman.
Right.
Right. Or a small gas station owner with a little tiny convenience store. All right, let's. We're going to take a break here. We'll come back and tell the flood story. We'll tell Brent's flood story. We'll talk about the tobacco taxes. And I don't know if I'm going to beat the dead horse of calling everything about for education. But I do want to talk a little bit about the situation with student loans and student debt, how controversial it's become, and even in Governor Brown's proposal with the $1 billion business tax. She wants to see more of that money go to career tech, which we, of course, favor, and easing student loan burden. All right. This is Brent DeHart. I'm here with Dave Bourne on KYKN. Stick with us. 1430 KYKN, Salem's listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers proudly brought to you by Colored Tile of Salem.
All right, welcome back, folks. Last Thursday, I had an experience. It's one of those things that's happening. You're like, gosh, I hope nobody ever finds out about this. You know, gosh.
This is the one where we reported.
We did not report this.
We report in the news kind of thing. Rescues. We were reporting rescues, of people that were driving into the flooding, had to be rescued from their cars,
that would
their
just
trucks.
Be stupid. That would just be
that
stupid.
Would just be stupid. Yours was more like, huh?
I feel
oops.
Exactly. That's exactly. That's all it is. It's much simpler. And folks, on Thursday I missed the show with Bud Pierce. We had to reschedule Bud
right.
Pierce. So looking forward to having him on, Dr. Bud Pierce, because I'm texting Dave from a high ground in the middle of floodwaters.
An unknown location.
Undisclosed. I can't explain right now because it's kind of embarrassing. All right. So where I live, how do I describe this? Well, there's a house and then there's some grasslands, right? And a grove of trees. And then there's an orchard. And then there's the Willamette River.
Okay.
All right. So...
how far would you say the Willamette River is from your house?
Oh, it's 600 feet, a couple football fields.
Okay, so yeah. During the flooding.
So that's the thing, the flood.
Last Thursday, how high did it come up?
Well, that's the thing. Next to the house, there's a creek that overflowed, and it's about 300, it's probably 300 feet. It's like a football field.
Okay.
You know? It's about 300 feet wide, completely flooded. You know, running. It's not just inundated with water, but it's flowing like the Willamette.
Okay.
Completely flooded because the creek has nowhere to go because the Willamette is full.
Right.
On the other side of this is an orchard, which is also high ground.
Okay.
Right? Because I can see a bit of it, and I can see that it's not underwater.
Okay.
There's grass, and there's the trees, and I can see it. And then on the other side of this Willamette with a pretty steep bank. So I'm curious. I'm like, oh, I'd like to go over to the orchard and take pictures and... So see if the Willamette had crested its own bank because we're thinking in terms of the Willamette flooding.
Sure, sure.
It was actually backed up water from the Willamette or however you want to call it or from the creek. And it's yes. Finding another way through the slope.
So curiosity almost killed the cat.
Oh, come on. You're so dramatic. So I borrow the neighbor's kayak. I go out there. I launch from...
Wait, it was your neighbor's kayak?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
And... I know what I'm doing. I've been on a kayak. I can operate a kayak.
Yeah, I've been in a canoe a few times too, but still.
I can roll a kayak. I can, I know what I'm doing.
Okay.
But no, as an expert, it's not like I go to stage 4 rapids, but this is, it's 300 feet. I'm going to kayak over there, take some pictures, see if the Willamette crested the bank. There's the Willamette Greenway Trail there. And so I get in. And the only thing I wondered was how hard would I have to work because the current was kind of strong.
Sure.
So I launch. It was kind of pretty stable. This is all right. Hit some fast current.
Mm-hmm.
Paddle against it. Oh, it's fine. Not that hard to maneuver through here. Little lull. second level of current, second area of current, like an idiot. Hey, this is a good lesson, folks, in case you ever want to go kayaking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what I should have done and knew better is I needed to either take the current at a 45-degree angle either into the current or along with the current. And
right.
I don't know. I was distracted or whatever. I let the current hit me sideways.
Oh, Brett. So,
bloop, off I go into the water. So now I'm in the floodwaters, and I'm floating, and I'm like holding on to a tree in the middle of my property. I'm like, what the heck? And all these things are going through my head like, all right, I'm still holding onto the kayak. Right,
but you lost your paddle.
I did.
Oh,
so I'm holding on the kayak. I'm thinking, well, what's the easiest solution here? The water was not as cold as I thought, you know, because you hear people who drown. A lot of people who drown is
hypothermia,
really,
yeah.
really cold.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this is not one. I'm not very far from being able to stand in either direction.
Okay,
and two, I can swim, but I'm holding on to the kayak, thinking, let the kayak go. And buy the neighbor a new kayak. This is all the things going through my head, right? Do I just like let this go? How much does this kayak cost? Water's rushing by me and everything. And or if I, well, should I not let it go? Because it's floating, right?
So and it's your neighbor's.
So it's either an anchor for me or it's a savior for me. And I thought, well, do I crawl on top of this thing? Because I do know how to remount a kayak.
Okay.
But it seems like that's going to be more work than just going over here to the side.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
I decided to go over to the side. So I kind of side swim, you know, grab a fir tree and pull the kayak up. I'm in the orchard. I'm on dry ground. Everything's fine. This whole thing, it's like 5 minutes, not even 5 minutes from when I launched off. Because I was only going 300 feet, right?
Right.
So I'm in the orchard. I'm on high ground. It's dry. I got no way back.
Was it raining?
No.
Okay.
No, it was a nice day. And so I'm like, well, this is a pickle. So I start looking. By the way, the orchard was dry, most of it. The Willamette had breached that tall bank, just a small segment.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a large segment of the Willamette, paved Willamette Greenway Trail, that was dry. So I'm looking at this. I'm like, how far? Should I go north? Should I go south? And in both directions, I could walk a ways, but I can't get back.
You just can't get back to your house?
I can't get back off this high ground in the middle of my own property. So I'm standing there. I'm not in any danger. I'm standing there dry ground, but I'm like, And I did this question for quite a while. I called my son and he's on the other side. We're trying to find a solution of how I can get. And the silly thing about it is if I had just held on to my paddle, because I would have an issue.
You sure?
Yeah, because I would just relaunched. It was no big deal. I mean,
you would have walked back over to the where you across from where you've launched originally and just gone back across?
I just would have kayaked. I mean, it was not that challenging. It's not like it was a really challenge. It was just clumsy.
Okay.
So it wasn't by any means death-defying chore. It was just go from here to there. Anyway, if I had a paddle, then I could just relaunch, even if I decided to take out further down. It was no big deal. However, I had no paddle, and little sticks on the ground was not going to cut it. And
no.
I was not going to float until I got to Tualatin or, you know, whatever. So... that was my issue. So I'm supposed to head over to the radio station and I'm there stuck. And so eventually we're like, I could get about halfway across. There were places where I could walk, you know, and it was just calf deep or knee deep water.
Okay.
So I could walk about halfway but from there to, you know, getting to where you get back to the house and get back to driving somewhere, impossible. I mean, then I definitely would have been a story. That would have been... Man washes up. Unknown bloated man drowns. And anyway, I missed the show, folks. Did something dumb. So one, I guess I should give kudos to my first responders because they came out with a boat to go about 100 feet.
You know, wow.
100 feet, took a couple 100 feet. And I had these rescue of a boat, and I'm like, this is really embarrassing. Are you hurt? I'm like, my toes are cold. But could you please hurry up and do this before the Channel 2 News chopper comes over?
Right?
I'm like, oh, God, I'm just standing there and just standing there. I'm like, I got nowhere to go. Couldn't get back to do the show. So sorry, everyone, for missing. But you did play one of my favorite shows in my stead.
Yes, it was a good show with your wife.
Okay.
standing in for you. So in case you missed it, Brent was in the news.
Stop. I'm a newsmaker.
Definitely was a newsmaker on Thursday. There was a little blurb about people being rescued on Thursday.
All right, let's move on. Enough
His name was not mentioned, but now you know.
No, I've outed myself.
Yes, you did.
It was clumsy, folks, but it was not death.
So how much did your neighbor charge you for the paddle?
He was very cool. The neighbor was very cool about the whole thing. I'm like, just tell me what model you not want. I'll just go get it.
It's right.
Sorry, I lost your paddle. All right,
man.
So we still have some time to talk us about something that's important. Tobacco taxes. We're talking about revenue this hour. Tobacco taxes. The governor would like to have $2 a pack.
More taxes?
Oh, yeah, on tobacco. And it really starts to get people's gander as if, you know.
Well, think about who does the majority of the smoking.
Poor people.
Now, I used to be a smoker back when I was really kind of poor. And when they raised the tax to where it was more than $2-3 a pack, they went up to like $5. That's when I quit smoking. So that was, you know, 15 some years ago.
So is it kind to the lower income people who tend to predominantly be the smokers to raise the tax on them and force them off? Or is it kind to not tax them?
Well, see, they're not understanding, though. If the more you raise the taxes on cigarettes or tobacco in general, it will force people to get off. Hence, no more revenue.
Well, I think the anti-tobacco people would be happy to give up the revenue and have a healthier populace.
Right, but as the state says, oh, we need to raise the taxes on this, it's not a guaranteed tax revenue source because the more you raise the taxes, the fewer people are going to take part in buying it.
Yeah.
Same with alcohol.
It would raise $346 million as part of a six-year revenue package. And they're trying
it
to
won't last that long.
Stabilize the Oregon health plan.
It won't last that long.
You can stabilize the Oregon health plan. I don't know. I'm hoping they've done the math. You need to prevent a lot of cancer, all right, and a lot of emphysema and things like that and all these other complicating diseases to lower your costs of the health care because people are no longer smoking. Is that the trade-off? And how are you going to do without the tax money?
Exactly. That's my point.
All right. So President Plaid Pantry also testified. A lot of people testified. And there were a lot of small businesses, people that sell vape. And vape is where it really, what do you do with vape? Is this a way for people to get off tobacco? Or are you going to tax it like tobacco? So
you
there
know
was
they will.
A representative that came up, not state representative, but a citizen that came to talk to the issue who was like from Medford. And said, hey, you know, I've gotten hundreds of people off tobacco cigarettes by transitioning to vape and maybe presumably off of vape. Anyway, back to Plaid Pantry, who typically has, you know, a good presence at testifying on behalf of small business at the Capitol, called it a tyranny of the majority.
Right.
Tyranny of, we're not smokers, so we're just going to tax these people because you can't fight back. So he thought it was kind of undemocratic and it would lead to cigarette bootlegging.
I could see that. That's what happened when they overtaxed alcohol. Remember?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And we know that people come across the border from Washington and buy these cigarettes and they go.
Right. Because it's cheaper. So
Anyway, we're going to have to take a break. I do want to talk and we're going to talk about. This was really interesting to me, but how the Housing Authority had a goal for some low-income housing, and there's something in the news that sounds really good, but it's mixed with Urban Renewal Agency goals, and that should be a little controversial. You listen to Newsmakers with Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center and our friends at Green Acres Landscape.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. Dave, I wanted to say... what I should have said is... I'm glad you stopped smoking.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
It goes back quite a number.
I feel a lot better. Yeah, 14 years.
So 14 years. Thank you for stopping. You know, my father passed away, complications of emphysema. My grandfather passed away of emphysema, esophageal cancer or throat cancer.
Wow.
So I'm glad that you're a more healthy individual and knocked that down.
Well, there were several reasons that I quit smoking. One was we were living in East Wind territory in Fairview, out there by Troutdale. So going outside to smoke became a shivering kind of thing. And I was like, I'm not really enjoying this anymore. Two, it was getting more and more expensive. And three, I thought about my career, that I used my voice as my tool for work. And I wanted to save that.
Yeah, but you were saying that at $5 a pack kind of threshold really was it. And now they're talking about $2 a pack on top of current
that,
costs.
Which is almost seven something, right?
It is one of the things that perplexes people and actually gives fodder is if you drive by the United Gospel Mission, every male out there, it seemingly is smoking.
Right. It's predominant in the low income and...
In the irony of that is tobacco was originally imported to from the colonies to England and the continent as something for the rich. It was it was a luxury.
Yeah.
All right.
It was.
Going off tobacco, talking about the tax bill we were talking about earlier, the quote that had to do with education, because there always has to be, you always have to pretend like every new revenue dollar they're going to jab you with is for education. But this is an education package, and the mayor said... that she would like to have, the governor, she'd have more money going to, student loan relief kind of things, and for career tech, right?
Okay.
So there it is. I'm sorry. Bolster career and technical education, expand financial aid for college students. Sometimes I just wish I went to public university, my kids goes to public university and so forth. But sometimes I wish they wouldn't mix the two. What's K-12? Let's get K-12 done in the embarrassing graduation rate.
Yeah.
Rather than help people pay for higher education, because it's absolutely not a right to go to higher education. It's absolutely not a need, a necessity for people to go to higher education. So colleges... I don't know if I'm on board with that.
I went with some college. I went to Mount Hood Community College, and I paid my own way.
My wife took, I think, 5 years because she worked through college.
Yeah.
I worked summers and part-time during college and so on and so forth. I don't know.
It seems like there's a catch-22. We were talking about this during the break.
Yeah, so here's the problem. College costs are very, very expensive, and people are getting out of college with, a small mortgage payment just in college student loans and starting their lives. And, then we're supposed to feel sorry for them. But part of me is like, well, if you can't afford it, don't go. Why do we keep giving the message that everybody has to be able to afford to go? Or if you go, we have to make it easy for getting loans. So here's the disconnect, folks. And Brent likes to do the math and follow the money. If college is too expensive, it's just flat out too expensive, and you cannot get loans for it, you don't go, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't go because you can't afford it. So you go into the trades, you start your own business.
You go to a Mount Hood Community College.
You go to somewhere else.
Some other community college.
But what if we made loans ubiquitous and easy to get and guaranteed by the federal government? You can get a loan, so therefore you can go to college.
Isn't that what happened to the housing crisis?
That is a very good tie there, Mr. Yeah. Dave Bourne.
Thank you.
We don't have time for that. We'll have to circle back to that. But yes, they made it too easy to get a college education. So now there's no barrier because you can go get these federally backed, secured loans to go to college. Well, what happens is enrollment to college skyrockets because there's no more barriers. It's not an economic barrier. You can go because you can borrow the money. And then we have a problem because you're graduating with too much debt, and then we have to do something about that. Like, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
What if, let's go back to the scenario where the loans didn't exist, there wouldn't be such a high demand on the universities in enrollment. What would they have to do? Could they skyrocket their costs if demand for their product is down folks, you get it? We've made the demand so high by doing public policy, making it easy for people to go into debt so that they can go to college, so that they can graduate with a ton of debt, and then that's the problem. And then we wonder why the cost of higher living, higher education, has skyrocketed. You don't wonder. The demand is high, folks, because you made it easy and no money out of pocket.
Right. Right.
I was talking to a friend of mine recently. Kids went to Oregon. And they go to Oregon because I can totally see how they're coming out of this institution without any grasp on reality or what it's like to come out, share an apartment, have ramen for dinner, peanut butter on the side when you can afford it, and
exactly.
suffer through these things because they're going to University of Oregon and they make it so nice. The dorms are like all this food on demand. Here, this just goes on my ticket. This just, you know, and they eat whatever they want and everything seems like it's one of those entitled kind of existences.
And the parents get the bill.
And yeah, but there's no, oh, well, I don't know if I can afford to do that. It's just all there. Everything's laid out and available to them and what have you. So that's my concern with the college loans and the student debt. And I try not to be a judgmental jerk on too many topics. But when people start whining about their student, I'm 25 and I've got all this debt and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, didn't you make the choice to go into debt?
Right.
That, to me, that sounds exactly like, God, I can barely, you know, afford to go out for beers because of my Escalade payment. Hello? You may not be able to. I mean, it made me feel sorry. You can afford alcohol. You're worried about not being able to afford alcohol because you're a great car. That's not something to worry about. And college is not a necessity. It is not a right. It is expensive.
Yes.
And if you can't afford to go to college, don't go to college.
Right.
I'm a big fan of college. I mean, I think it's great, but and I think it lifts a new generation out of poverty, almost. I have to do economic study on this, but the number one thing that lifted poor immigrants out of poverty for the next generation is home ownership. Home ownership in America created the middle class because you ended up with equity that you passed to the next generation.
Right.
And then you have net worth, you have value and net worth and so forth. And a lot of people who are able to scrimp and scrape and buy a home where they would not have in the country of origin during the great immigration years. And still to this day, that's what lifts a certain segment that's below middle class into the middle class is home ownership, and education is the other one. And the education, we have an opportunity to go to education, and maybe work through college. Maybe it takes 8 years. It doesn't matter. But with that education, get to a point where you have a higher income and create more people in the middle class. All
so
right.
So the K through 12 should be all the basics, and it shouldn't be real easy.
Yeah.
It was hard for my senior year. It was hard.
Yeah.
And there were, and I complained about it. My teacher's like, well, it's going to be harder in the real world. Learn this now and be prepared.
Interesting.
I was, yeah, that was the teacher I didn't like, but he's my best friend now because he was hard on me and he knew that my hard work would pay off.
All right. So, the Student Success Act, is what it's called. I invest over $2 billion over a biennium. I don't know why $1 billion a year. Into K-12 education.
I'm okay? Sorry.
Going to K-12. Ugh. I get that. So more teachers, more support staff, more hopefully instructional days, more elective extracurricular activities and so forth. I'm getting all of this from a great article in from the Salem Reporter. Early Childhood Edge, which of course.
That's being important.
To, that, yeah. You know, and Kitzhaber was big on that, but there was talk, but not necessarily action. That got us there.
Yeah.
Mental and behavioral health resources.
That's See? Good too. But again, got to circle back. How much more money do we have to keep throwing at it? How come they can't manage the money that they already have? It seems like we every other year, $1 million more, $1 billion more. How much more money do the schools need?
To get the result.
To get the result that is needed for them to be successful.
And then if you're not being successful, it's a little hard to go with you. Here's the point. You're not getting to where we want as a populace to be. So how you, it, the hard part is for them to convince us all that throwing more money is the solution.
They've been doing it for years. Years.
And the fact, you know, and then the detractors with reasonable connections say, hey, this is because the money's not going to go in the classroom. The money's going to go in a purse.
Yeah.
Money's they, not going to go in the classroom.
Never
money's
told us
go
that.
To purse.
Yeah, exactly.
And so on and so forth. We got to take a break.
But before we do that.
Yes.
Did I tell you the story about a certain tax that I paid for like 3 years?
No.
No?
No.
I thought I told you this one. Okay. When I lived in Multnomah County several years ago, daughter was going to high school there. They passed that iTax. Do you remember that? Remember hearing about that?
No.
It was an extra $300 a year for 3 years. And we're like, okay, my daughter's in school. I'll vote for this. And I kept track of it. Okay. $300 a year. After the first year, I asked her, I said, have you noticed any changes in your school? We're throwing more money at you through everybody that's in the county. No, she hasn't noticed anything. 2 years go by. Nothing changed. 3 years. Ashley, has anything changed in your school that we've been throwing 3 years worth of money at it? Extra $300. No, we're still sharing photocopied books and sharing desks. And there's like 40 of us in the classroom. I'm like, then that tax that they threw at us didn't go anywhere near the classroom.
Where do you suppose it went, Dave Bourne?
I'm pretty sure now it went to PERS. I didn't realize that at the time. I'm watching my pocketbook more because of you.
Huh?
I'm watching my pocketbook more because of you.
Okay. Yeah, good stuff. All right. Stick with us. There's so many things to get to. I did promise to talk about the Housing Authority mixing with the Urban Renewal Agency. And is it a good thing or is it controversial? I promise to talk about it right after this on Newsmakers 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Hamblin's Nursery.
Welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Warren on Newsmakers. Tomorrow we're gonna have the sheriff on from Polk County. So we're talking about today about so many different ways that the government wants to take money out of your wallet, right? County government, city government, state government.
Sometimes they're good, and sometimes they're like, huh?
Hopefully, everyone who listens to Newsmakers will get a balanced picture of this. Sheriff Mark Garton. Actually, and Commissioner Craig Pope will be here tomorrow. So we've had
the big
commissioner.
Guns.
Yeah, it'll be so we'll talk about that, and we'll have the mayor on Thursday to talk about some of the revenue increases that are coming by the city of Salem that they're considering. All right, I promised to talk about this. Now, it has to do, and it's billed as affordable housing and homeless issue connect. Okay, I get that.
Okay, yeah.
Let's put in our caring hearts for the homeless and people who are poor and struggling and so forth. So the Housing Authority, City of Salem, new property in Northeast Salem called Redwood Crossings. So it's over on Fisher Road on the northeast side. It'll be a new complex for people that make $13,700 a year maximum or less.
Really?
So... obviously, very low-income people or no-income people.
Okay.
There's also accommodations for people with medical issues, maybe that are too ill. So there's six rooms that are actually medical. And so this whole facility was built or started as an assisted living kind of facility. It was never finished. So it was, so they purchased it, they're rehabbing it, and they're creating this thing. It'll have social services in-house, laundry area, community kitchen, for provide some humane housing for people that really need it, housing first facility. And here's where the disconnect is, potential disconnect. I don't know. You can tell me how you think about it.
Okay.
The way they made it pencil is the Urban Renewal Agency. We've talked a lot about Urban Renewal. bought the property at market value, and then they're selling it to the housing authority with $1 million discount.
What?
And then the housing authority can afford to take this thing, rehab it, and provide these services. The question is that what urban renewal money is to be used for? It's a 20,000 square foot building. They hope to have it up, you know, and operating by this fall, and having a lot of people get housing that currently don't have it, presumably. So there's like 35 units in this thing. Okay. So, hey, I think it solves a nice need. They absolutely feel as though we need affordable housing, and we need to serve the homeless, and they do need social services. And this is a way to do so relatively affordably, because, you know, you're using a communal kitchen and you have social services. It's built for this purpose. I get it. I'm a fan of urban renewal, but I don't know if I would have voted yes on this if I'm sitting on the city council floor. I'm a fan of urban renewal.
Yeah.
And I may be a fan of the project. I don't know. I don't know that much about it. But say I am a fan of the project, I think I'm still a no, because urban renewal should go through infrastructure to raise property values so that it repays itself to the taxpayer and you make the investment.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Not everybody is, and I want to grant you that. There's two sides of this argument. Just like the tobacco tax we talked about earlier, there's the, does it get people off smoking? Is that a societal good? Or are you taxing the lowest income Oregonians because they can't speak up? Do we have a right to have an unhealthy lifestyle? There's two sides of this argument. So in urban renewal dollars, not everybody loves urban renewal. But to use it for social service building, for use it for social service goals and not economic development goals.
I see.
Not property tax increases, not revitalization of a neighborhood. That's what it's urban renewal. Urban renewal is tied to the word blight.
Right.
It's to relieve blight.
Well, you said the building was vacant.
It's vacant. Yeah. Yeah.
Come
but
on.
The goal is to provide a social service need.
I gotcha. But it was a little blight.
Okay.
And they're fixing it up, making the neighborhood vibrant again.
Okay. You got to throw in all those ridiculous arguments that people
all the
made.
Ones you brought
they're
up.
Tenuous type.
You're the one who brought them up earlier.
All right. So here's the thing, folks. I think there's a reason to object, or at least throw some shade at those two things and whether or not they should be collected. Mind you, urban renewal often sells properties at a loss. Okay, that's how it works. We're going to use the power of this tax pile of money to buy two or three properties and maybe aggregate them, things that are not really suitable to be redeveloped, like mm-hmm. all of downtown Salem, folks,
right.
Like all the incentive. And then they buy it all, and you maybe tear it down. They're going to do a Union Gospel mission, and we got to get out of here.
We do.
All right, but it's used as a catalyst, folks, but I'm not so sure as a catalyst to a social service goals, right? Thanks for being a Newsmakers. This is Brent for Dave on 1430 KYKF.
See you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.